Marcus, welcome along for another week.
Can't wait. Should be good.
You might remember earlier in the week, there was much fanfare about probably the biggest historical moment of the year so far.
What was that?
Good question. What was that? It was Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Yes. I was actually thinking the royal wedding. But yes, this is way bigger.
Yeah. Real historical moment. We witnessed history happen.
Yes, we did.
Or did we? Or was it just something else that we saw happen?
Hard to know, but we'll thrash it out as much as we can.
Yeah, and a really interesting cameo, celebrity style cameo, which is
a few tears shed.
Really caught our attention. What else you brought to my attention this week that people are now cloning monkeys?
Monkeys. You got to love monkeys, but have we taken it too far? Are we going a bit Frankenstein?
Let's talk about that. And also, just a little bonus extra tack onto the end of this podcast, a very helpful guide to how best to survive in a plummeting elevator.
You can never accuse us of not being informative. And educational.
This is
a big one, an important one.
Well, it sounds grim, but really, what do they say? Knowledge is power. So arm yourselves with the facts.
That's right.
If you find yourself in this unfortunate position, this is what you need to do.
Could lift your spirits, could elevate your focus.
That's your pun. If only that were your pun quota for the week, but I know there's much more ahead. All that, not much more. It's One Newsman and a Web Guy. Earlier this week, Newsman, amazing scenes of historic moments, history in the making, all that. You know, fun stuff.
All eyes on Singapore for the summit between President Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Yep, that's right. First time a sitting president has ever met with a leader of North Korea. I think is pretty much what is the, the record-breaking thing about this.
And adding drama to the event was it was on, then it was off again, and then it was on again. So there was always even just uncertainty. Is it actually going to happen? And it has.
And these are two cats that like a bit of theatre. they are both, in their different ways, use media to really, sell a certain image of themselves.
Not too subtle on either party, really. No. We often poke fun at North Korea for, the way that not too obvious ways of promoting, missile launches and things like that.
Yeah.
But really, Donald Trump is no less subtle or sophisticated in the way he pushes his messages.
Yeah, and the stakes are really high, which makes this whole thing, particularly newsworthy because, end of the day, North Korea, most agree, have nuclear weapons. So, kind of a big deal.
Shooting them out sort of Japan way.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
So, kind of a bit of a chaotic country armed with nuclear weapons. Yeah, I don't know. Good thing that we just, maybe sort this situation out is what a lot of people
think. And a lot better situation than having immature insults going across Twitter sphere, which was happening, last year or early this year?
Yeah, like, my nuke's bigger than your nuke, I'm not afraid to use it.
It just felt it was unraveling and getting out of control. So at least the guys talking and positive vibes coming out of it. It's really hard to know how much we can expect to be actually achieved, but they're talking.
As we talk now, that's sort of still all unfolding, exactly what the wash-up is of this whole thing. But one thing we know for a fact is Dennis Rodman has, former NBA superstar. He has kind of been a part of this whole thing for a good few years now. Kim Jong-un famously is a huge NBA fan, invited Kim Jong-un over to North Korea years ago, and Dennis Rodman went.
Played an exhibition basketball match?
Yeah, he went with a couple of Harlem Globetrotters. Anyway, they became friends. Had a rapport, struck up a friendship. So what Dennis Rodman's role has been in the bringing together of the American leader and the North Korean leader, who knows? I don't know. But I do know that I've seen an interview with Dennis Rodman. Actually, most of the world has seen this interview where he was interviewed by an American news anchor as the big meeting was unfolding. And Rodman just, you know, by all reports, he's an emotional man. He dropped his bundle. He just broke down, spoke about how he has received death threats in the past for, you know, kind of how close he has been to Jong-un. And he has copped a lot of flack for going over there, meeting the guy, becoming friends with the guy. And now that, you know, the two countries are meeting up, Rodman was saying this is a great day. The emotion was too much. It bubbled over. The result was this unbelievable TV interview where he seemed to just have reached a point where he just let loose now, let it all go. The tears were flowing.
Who would have thought this really odd NBA star would become such a, you know, he's probably an important person to link America to Kim Jong-un in terms of relatability.
Yeah, a link man. That's what he is. You've nailed it. He is the link man because if you go through the world's population, you don't find many people who are friends with both Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. That is a very small overlap of people who are friends with both those. And probably he's the only one in the whole world. He worked with Donald Trump on, you know, that Apprentice TV show. Mm. So he knows Trump from that, and he knows Kim Jong-un, as we spoke about. So potentially the only person in the world who is kind of close to both.
Without condemning or approving of anything that is done in North Korea, I guess if someone could go and meet Kim Jong-un and separate everything that he does that is destructive and unstable for that nation, perhaps he is a likable guy. Like, if you just had a one-on-one with him, forgot about... Surely he's not a nasty, big-talking guy all the time.
But don't you think, like, this is starting to get a bit psychological?
Yeah.
But, you know, some of the most ruthless, you know, cruel people probably are the best kind of actors, you know, can put on a charming... kind of facade, maybe, apparently. So
he's put a Swiftie over.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, I'm sure, you know, one-on-one, Kim Jong-un might be a normal person if you forget all the baggage, which is, you know, probably responsible for the deaths of many, many. I don't know what the numbers are, but he's pretty much condemned for being, you know, just murderous. I don't think it's too far to say.
But I guess a guy like Dennis Rodman would be someone who can put that all behind or to the side and enjoy whatever the old KJU can bring to the conversation.
Well, he admitted in this interview that he was naive the first time he met Kim Jong-un. So you're right. He didn't realise probably the extent of that baggage. He just thought it was, you know, a kind of a gig, you know. Go over to this country.
Yeah.
You know, meet this guy, probably get a bit of money, do a tour. He went without any of the, you know, background knowledge, and says now, well, yeah, he didn't really know, but yeah, maybe that's what it took. Who knows? Who are we to judge? Bottom line, if some good can come out of this meeting, well, then it's good for everyone, hopefully.
The thing you mentioned about death threats, I think I'm seeing a common practice in society now, and especially online, that it's now, it used to be turn the other cheek, just sort of cop thing. Now it's like eye for an eye, like, so everyone's like condemning Dennis Rodman for being friends with Kim Jong-un, but threatening to kill him. Like, I mean, where does that put you if you're threatening to kill
him? No better.
There's a lot of like that toing and froing. I don't like it.
So Rodman, you know, chief diplomat, whatever. This comes 1 week after what's her name, Kim Kardashian West, photographed in the White House meeting Donald Trump. A lot of the talk is now, well, who's next? It's just a rotating roster of celebs coming in and out of the White House, helping Donald Trump do the job. Maybe it's a new style of governing. We should probably get ready to see equivalent here in Australia.
Web guy, I love monkeys.
Yeah, well, I don't mind them, but not in real life, if that makes sense.
Right, when you're actually confronted with one on your shoulder or...
Yeah, if I go to the monkey forest in wherever, yeah. I don't want the monkey actually crawling on me.
Yeah, I must admit, when I went to Bali, the monkey forest was a little worrying. Like, there were no restrictions. It felt like the monkeys, it really had a Planet of the Apes feel to it.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, off topic a little bit, Chinese scientists have cloned a pair of female macaques, I think that's how you say it.
Okay.
And they've been alive for 6 months now. So that is considered a real breakthrough in the cloning process.
Mm.
Described by some as a freak show or a horror show. Because often, you know, people are really worried about genetically engineering and cloning.
Mm.
We had Dolly the sheep.
How long did Dolly live for?
Not sure, but it was a good innings, I think.
Longer than 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you brought up an example of science sort of grafting a certain mouse with a certain...
Mm. An ear.
An ear, yes.
Grew an ear on the back of a mouse.
Yeah. So have we come a long way since Dolly the sheep? Are people more comfortable with the thought of cloning animals? And I guess this would be a long-term vision in terms of cloning a human so that you could get a new heart, a new body part, and extend your life.
Oh, shnikes. If they're cloning monkeys,
mm.
then... I mean, why they can do humans, surely. Like, you know, they always say about genetically, you know, how close monkeys and humans
yeah.
are. If they're doing monkeys already, well, then, like, they are all the way there to being able to do it to humans. Maybe that is already known, that they have the technology. We just have some maybe moral questions that we still haven't answered, whether we should do it or not. It's not a question of whether we can do it.
Mm.
I reckon... They clearly can if they're doing monkeys. But should they? And what will happen? You said some had referred to it as a horror show.
Yes.
I mean, I haven't seen pictures or video of the monkeys. Do they look
normal? No, they're totally normal. I think it's more the concept of creating two little monkeys that have come from DNA rather than the actual process.
It's not like they had three tails and...
No, four
eyeballs.
No, and they seem to be socializing with other monkeys, so they're other macaques. So they seem to be going well in that respect. I think when it comes deep down to, if you had a loved one that was in real desperate need of a body part and somehow you could get an exact match for a crucial body part, I think we'd all really consider cloning as... a good thing.
In theory, it just seems like absolute no-brainer. Just have a spare you in the cupboard,
yeah.
just waiting, you know, if you need a new this or that. And then I guess if you do, you know, pilfer something from the clone because you need a new leg or something, then what, you clone up again? Always have a spare sitting in the wardrobe? In theory, well, that would make us immortal. But I guess... couple of things is, one, you know, we don't know yet maybe how long the cloned organs or whatever last for. You don't want a cloned brain just blowing up on you, you know, a couple of weeks later.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there would have to be so many tests, so many restrictions put in place because, yeah, you don't want a defective body part just going crazy.
I have a real deep question to hit you with, is there some essence in the human that we cannot clone? Because, you know, sure, you put a cloned brain into your head, but does that still mean you're the same person? Is it missing a little something, maybe a soul or a spirit,
yeah.
or whatever you call it?
Ooh.
Does that exist? I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah. Well, I think if you went brain, like that... That's a big ask.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. Mm. But I think, you know, an ear, a finger, a spleen.
But what if you replace so many parts eventually that you are now, have no original parts left at some point?
I think the brain would have to be the last frontier. You gotta leave that alone. Well, but why, I guess?
It's just an organ.
Yeah.
Do it with a heart, why not a brain?
Yeah. Oh, there's been so many movies as well. Like, would a cloned person have the shared experiences and memories of that previous person, or just starting from scratch, born as a baby, nature versus nurture starts all over again?
Would depend on when the cloning occurred, wouldn't it? Like, if you were implanting a brain clone from the baby clone of yourself, well, then, yeah, you might be a 40-year-old man, but you're immediately going to have the brain of a newborn. But I guess if you know, maybe when you hit 30, you say, all right, I'll clone myself now.
Yes.
Then 10 years down the track, oh, I need my clone brain. So now, then you revert back to 30-year-old you.
Yeah.
That's how I imagine my movie going if I was to make one about this, which clearly, you know, and as you said, it's been touched on, but it's a ripe field for just fascinating conjecture.
Yeah. So anyway, two female macaques have been cloned. They're going well. What's your thoughts? I'm open to see how far they can go with it, but make sure there are a lot of tests, a lot of restrictions before this gets unleashed on the public.
I'm for unleashing. Let's start tomorrow. Let's do this. Hey, newsman, I saw a story this week that I never knew I needed to read. But as soon as I saw a headline, I thought, yes, I'm going to read this. Could be a matter of life and death at some point.
Ooh.
Has to do with elevators.
Yes.
You know, you work in a city, more than likely you probably, up a few levels in a building.
Mm.
Got to take an elevator, usually, one way or another at some point. What's your worst fear when you step into an elevator?
Yeah, I think for everyone, and I guess there's degrees of fear for people, but it is the cable snaps and down she goes.
Yeah, plummeting. A plummeting lift.
I'm relieved to say you don't hear too many stories of that anywhere, really, do you? You don't hear too many stories coming out of developed countries of, 25 people died after an elevator.
Yeah, that's plummeted. True.
But it's scary. And I think movies have a lot to do with that because we see a lot of action films where people are scaling up and down the cables and people falling up and down in between the actual carriages, is that what you call them? The unit.
The elevator car.
There are those fears that something could go wrong.
You are right. It's not overly common. In fact, the chance of dying in a falling elevator is 1 in 650 million. And I quickly tried to crunch some sums and thought, well, if you're getting in a lift maybe 4 times a day for over maybe 48 weeks a year, 5 days of each of those weeks. Anyway, you're probably still unlikely. You know, you're not going to get close to that over your lifetime, over your working life.
Yeah.
Unlikely, but still there's a chance. There's still a chance.
There is. We've had a few people at our workplace get stuck in the lift. So they do break down, which is pretty scary as well if you're unsure where help is coming.
Yeah, and if it's gotten stuck, well, how much further is it to, just falling through the air? Like, it feels like you're almost halfway to disaster at that point.
Yes.
That said, it's not that likely, but why not just brush up on what is the number one best way to survive in a falling elevator?
I've always had a theory, and I've always had it in the back of my mind. I'm hoping it's on the list.
Well,
I'm thinking it's flimsy, but should I? Oh, you just say the list and I'll.
No, you tell me what your
okay,
theory
so
is.
Okay, so I figure if you have a feeling of, like, a vague feeling of, if you knew how close you were to impact, that you do a little jump in the air.
Yes.
You jump just before impact.
All right, I'm glad you said that because it's a well-known urban legend that if you just jump at the right time as the elevator's about to hit the ground, jump at the right time, you'll survive. But no, this is what they say. Average lift that's falling 20 stories, so that's pretty high up.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in Adelaide. We don't have that many skyscrapers, but anyway. average, it's that lift is likely to be traveling about 150 kilometers an hour. The speed of a human jump is about 5 kilometers per hour. So your body is still traveling down at 146 kilometers an hour. Okay. Gotcha. So you're still going to hit, you still hit the ground. You're assuming, oh, I jump up, I'll just float back down. So yes, you're going to hit the ground, but you're still going to hit it at about 146 k's an hour. You've taken 5 k's off your speed.
Right.
Just by doing that little jump. And also, if you think about it, you're in that plummeting lift. The floor is falling out literally beneath you. Really hard to jump.
Yes.
You're not jumping off a stable
floor. All right. I'll scrap that for my...
Oh, man, you need this article. You need this info badly.
So perhaps are you hanging from the top?
Oh, that's not a bad idea. Not actually mentioned in this
one. I'll wait. I'll listen to the experts now that my theory has been debunked.
One idea, this is not the best way, but one idea is to cushion the impact. If you're holding something big or bulky, a suitcase,
yeah,
something with you in the lift, the best thing to do is lay or stand on top of that. That will...
give you a little... Shock absorber.
Yeah, they say it's like a crumple zone in a car, so that will break the impact a little bit for you. But the number one best way, and this is so counterintuitive. This is, I would have probably been trying to jump like you. I would never have been doing this, which is the best way to survive a falling lift is to lie flat on the elevator floor with your arms and legs spread out in a starfish shape.
Okay.
This means you distribute the force of impact across your entire body.
Yes.
Less chance of serious injury to any one area. That would take some guts though, wouldn't it?
And some quick thinking, because it would take you a few seconds to realize what's happening.
Yeah. And also, you have to really be the only one in the lift. If it's a packed lift of 20 people, you can't all lay on the floor.
I'm starfishing it, baby.
You quickly tell everyone they should jump, and I'm going to do the starfish.
Everyone does a starfish. You're on the top, so you've got shock absorber of 4 or 5 people below.
Like
you.
A human pyramid starfish combo. Now, that is the best way, but then this article I read also tacked on this little additional tidbit, which seems to run counter to what they've just outlined, but they suggest using the part of your body with the most fat on it to cushion the blow. You want to try and protect your head and neck. So what, if you've got big guts or a big butt, or what, that maybe you lay on your, we'll try and lay on your butt if that's the most cushion, or if you've got really, I don't know, flabby arms, lay somehow on your arms. I don't know.
What are we going to do, Tim?
I'll be grabbing you and using you to break my fall. So there you go. Probably you never need to use it, but you know, now you know it.
And it has dispelled one of the things that I've been carrying around in my head for a long time.
Yeah.
I will no longer be jumping as a hurtling lift goes towards the ground.
Would like to explore a little bit your dangling theory. Could be a good myth.
Well, it depends how big, like, does the lift crush?
Well,
like, does it compact into like a third of its size?
If it does, you'd be in strife if you're hanging from the roof of it.
Yeah, I would be. The other, I hope there is a secondary story that is coming out soon. I saw a lift maintenance guy working on the lift at work. And he was sort of looking underneath the thing. And I said, oh, is it all right for me to press the button? Because I'm thinking, are you supposed to get out of a lift that is broken down but half up and down? With a fear that you'll be sliced in two as it goes.
Whoop! Oh, yeah. That could be bad.
So that's story number two.
I got my arm caught in a lift once, and it was sort of... I wasn't really thinking, but I stuck my arm into it. And then afterwards I thought, hang on, if I had kept on going up, it would have taken me with it, tore my arm off. I guess until the doors are completely shut, it won't move maybe.
Right. So you just couldn't get it out. How did you?
Yeah, I eventually just through embarrassment found some extra strength and just pried the doors open.
And there's always that story of one of our previous workmates and what he did in lift, but that's for another time.
Yep, won't go there.